AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction. Today I thought we would review the use of drugs and the rates of addiction around the world. One of the important things to remember is that addiction is addiction is addiction. But how we see it expressed in different cultures and in different areas of the world can be vastly different. Throughout history, we've seen references to the use of mind and mood-altering substances in almost all of recorded history. We know that ancient Egyptians were buried with amounts, some small, some larger, of cocaine, of nicotine, of marijuana. We know that references have been made in the Bible, in ancient Chinese texts, all throughout, again, all cultures and all different locations of the world. We know that people have been using mood and mind-altering substances. But the rate of addiction seems to have remained fairly consistent. There are a couple of exceptions that I think are important to note. The first is that there are a certain group of Asian patients or people who have an enzyme deficiency in their liver. This results in the failure to break down alcohol appropriately, and instead of it eventually becoming hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen that is easily eliminated from the body, it forms a substance like formaldehyde. And so folks who have this particular genetic dysfunction who are from Asian descent will often find that even a small amount of alcohol will create a very unpleasant and a very unfortunate series of side effects, including nausea, vomiting, difficulty with flushing. They get very, very red. They get very, very hot. Needless to say, it doesn't take too much of an exposure to alcohol for these individuals to really not want to consume alcohol at all. So in some ways, this ends up being very protective for these folks in terms of their risk of addiction. And we know certainly that individuals who are of First Nations descent here in North America, who we might refer to as Native Americans or First Nations people, they seem to have an increased genetic risk for addiction to particularly alcohol, nicotine, and they have a high rate of depression and suicide. With these two extremes, where we see some genetic protection against the disease of addiction and we see some particular people having more of a tendency towards the disease of addiction, what we see pretty consistently throughout the world is anywhere from 20 to 30% of the population will have a problem with addiction to substances over a lifetime. But those substances can vary quite a bit, depending on local customs, cultures, religious impact. And this got me really thinking as I was reading an article that came out last week regarding the state of Utah. Utah, here in the USA, has a high proportion of their citizens being members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or more commonly known of as Mormons. Now, many of you may be aware of the prohibition in the Mormon faith against the use of caffeine, nicotine, against the use of alcohol. And this results in their members of this church going to great lengths to avoid these substances. However, what is happening in the state of Utah now is that we're seeing many, many, many people, more than we would expect in other urban or suburban populations, these folks are addicted to prescription drugs. So they are avoiding the more common substances that the rest of the United States become addicted to, primarily nicotine, for example, and alcohol, and instead are becoming much more involved with addiction to prescription drugs because these are felt to be prescribed by doctors, safe medications, prescribed for a specific reason, and therefore exempt from the prohibition around using mood-altering substances. As a result, they found that 97% of adults in the state of Utah have taken and used prescription medications from a friend or family member without first getting a prescription from a doctor. This is a staggering number. Yet based out of that culture and that religious framework, it seems to be very common for people to not only be taking prescription pain medications and benzodiazepines, muscle relaxants, anti-anxiety medications, but they're sharing it with each other. And because of this, we're seeing that Utah has the highest prescription drug abuse rate in the United States for many years. In 2013, Utah ranked 8th highest among states for drug overdose deaths in the entire country. Now, that was not per capita. That was actual numbers. And though Utah is not a very well-populated state, this high ranking is very shocking to realize that they have one of the highest overdose death rates. In fact, this rate of drug overdose, particularly opiates but other substances as well, has risen 400% over the past decade. So here is the situation in which the rate of addiction or the rate of drug use is actually somewhat escalated above what we would expect, but because of the culture and because of the religion of many of the folks who live in this state, we see the drugs that they are using and the substances they are abusing and the substances they are dying from as being different than surrounding states and different than the rest of the country. Between 2004 and 2005, 7% of the population were using on a regular basis drugs, prescription drugs, without a doctor's order. And particularly troublesome is that many of the folks who are using and abusing these prescription drugs are actually kids in junior high school and high school. Now, we see that trend throughout the United States, but it is at an alarming rate in the state of Utah. And along with this increase abuse of prescription drugs, we're seeing an increased number of people dying from this. The White House Deputy Chief Policy Director has made a visit here in 2004 to Salt Lake City and is working very closely with a number of professionals in Salt Lake and other centers throughout the state to begin to address this serious problem with drug abuse and overdose death. So as I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking, well, here is certainly an example of drugs used and abused differ from place to place. When we look a little bit further to our north and look to Toronto, there was a release of a study just last week by CAMH, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Canada, looking at Ontario adults, looking at the rates of use and abuse of drugs over the year 2013. There were some good things that had happened. One of the things that they were seeing was that the actual non-medical use of prescription pain medicine had gone down in Ontario for the first time. In fact, it had dropped from almost 8% to about 3% in 2013 in older adults. Now, the 18 to 24-year-olds, unfortunately, are continuing to use and abuse prescription opiates at the same rate. But it was important to see that this decrease of approximately 3% had happened. So that's some good news. Bad news is that the use of cannabis had almost doubled from 9% to 15% of the adult population in 2013. It's important to understand that in Canada, medical cannabis is readily available. And as we see within the states of the United States, that those states that have approved medical cannabis, we see a significant increase in the rate of recreational or illegal use of cannabis in those states. And we're seeing the same thing happen in our neighbor to the north in Canada. Rates of alcohol consumption very high. Nearly one in four drinkers in Canada exceed the low drinking guidelines, which of course is one drink per day per woman, not to exceed seven per week, and two drinks per man, not to exceed 14 per week. So they're seeing that at least a quarter of their drinkers are drinking well above the recommended rate of alcohol consumption. And what we're also noticing here is that in Canada, the drinking age is 18. So we see more people using alcohol at an earlier age and a more consistent basis than we see even here in the United States. Women in Canada are drinking even more than usual, and this has gone up about 5% in 2013. This is worrisome because of the risk to women, particularly in their own health. We know that women using alcohol have an increased risk of damage to liver and to their brain than do men, even when we normalize for the differences in the size and the amount of alcohol consumed. A smaller amount of alcohol over a shorter period of time is much more devastating to a woman's health. But of greater concern is that many of these women who are drinking heavily throughout the world, but especially in Canada, they are of childbearing age. And the risk of alcohol-related birth defects and the fetal alcohol syndrome that we see increases as we see more and more young women partaking of alcohol and drinking it in an abusive and dangerous way. Another finding from this study was that the majority of folks in Ontario do not smoke cigarettes, and that cigarette smoking in Canada has actually decreased from 27% of the population in 1996 to about 17% in 2013. And we give a shout out to our friends at the Tobacco Healing Center up in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, for their good work in raising the awareness around the dangers of cigarette smoking and developing a protocol to help people stop smoking. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about drug and alcohol use around the world, going a little further outside our borders. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Please stay tuned.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
We're talking about addiction and drug use around the world. We started with Utah, looking at the influences of culture and religion on the drugs of use and abuse. And we also looked briefly at Canada to see our neighbor to the north, understanding that they're having significant problems with alcohol and also increasing problems with marijuana. Good news is that tobacco smoking is down, and we congratulate them on that. If we look across the ocean a little bit, one of the countries that has been long recognized as being on the forefront of looking at the use and abuse of drugs is the Netherlands. Now, the Netherlands has been one of the most outspoken countries in terms of having a major drug policy that is very different than most of its neighbors, and certainly very different than the United States and Canada. Here in the United States, Canada, in France, Germany, Belgium, and other European nations, the idea that recreational drug use should be definitely eliminated, and that careful monitoring and prosecution of drug distribution centers and drug trafficking are major goals of most countries' drug policy. The Netherlands has created a very different viewpoint, and they have four major objectives. The first one is to prevent recreational drug use and to treat and rehabilitate recreational drug users. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Probably most significant, and the one that we talk about most in terms of treatment philosophies, and that's the idea of harm reduction. Many countries are moving more towards a harm reduction model, which does not necessarily mean that the person uses less drugs, that they use them less frequently, but rather that they are creating less harm to themselves. So we see, even here in the United States, even here in Atlanta, we have some needle exchange programs. The idea being we're not going to encourage IV drug users to use fewer drugs, but we're going to encourage them to use them in a safe way. And in doing so, we'll provide them with clean needles so that we reduce the risk of their developing HIV or hepatitis C, and also reduce the risk of spreading to others. So the harm reduction model looks at decreasing the physical, the psychological, the harm to the person and also to society. The third objective of the drug policy of the Netherlands is to diminish the public nuisance by drug users. And so the idea is that they're going to patrol areas in which people are using drugs, and that they are going to promptly arrest or try and disperse public intoxicate people who are publicly intoxicated, and to remove them from the streets so that the general community, the neighborhood, is not bothered by the recreational use of drugs. And the fourth is to combat the production and trafficking of recreational drugs. So these are their initiatives that they are taking very seriously. And unfortunately, we're beginning to see a change in their policies. Many of you are probably quite aware of the coffee shops, particularly in Amsterdam, where marijuana, and up until I believe it was 2011, you could buy hallucinogenic mushrooms, and you could buy a variety of forms of marijuana, including hashish and other more potent forms of cannabis. So freely sold to individuals, either natives of the Netherlands or visitors from other countries, and openly used, not just sold, but openly used in these coffee shops. This has created some difficulty, and there are new rules that are being put into place as early as 2011, which are reducing tourist access to cannabis. They've certainly completely outlawed the sale and use of hallucinogenic mushrooms and other hallucinogenic substances. They've now made a change in their regulations regarding the THC or the psychoactive substance in marijuana, and now anything that is over 15% THC is classified as a hard drug like cocaine or like heroin and is now illegal to be sold, distributed, or used. Many of the smaller cities throughout the Netherlands have completely banned the coffee shops. The coffee shops that are in Amsterdam are now being more closely regulated, and about a third of them have either been closed or their hours of operation have been reduced if they are near a school district or a school zone. So they're not able, if they're allowed to stay open, they're not able to sell until after school hours, and they must close before school starts in the morning. They're having an increased problem of drug use among their youth, and they're having an increased problem with recreational marijuana tourism. This has created all sorts of difficulties for their neighbors, as neighboring countries are trying to monitor and prevent the exportation, if you will, of the marijuana into their countries. It's causing an increased burden on bordering countries trying to maintain their own laws and prevent people who have been in the Netherlands from bringing drugs out of the country. So these new laws are taking effect, and it is changing the face of the Netherlands. They're relooking at some of their policies and trying to determine whether or not they're going to be able to continue at all allowing drug tourism. The problems that have increased include not just more potent marijuana, but they're seeing increased trafficking of cocaine and certainly increased trafficking among drug users of heroin. Heroin continues to be an increased problem, and they're one of the few nations, although Canada has also established some treatment programs that actually use heroin for treatment of heroin drug dealer or drug users. So the Netherlands was and has always been held up as one of the more liberal countries in terms of allowing recreational drugs beyond alcohol or tobacco that we see in other surrounding nations, but they are now having to rethink and redevelop some of their drug policies because of the increased burden on their local and city governments in trying to take care of the increased numbers of individuals who are now actively addicted to substances and ill and needing treatment in their streets. So we look at the impact of culture. We look at the impact of laws. Some of the things that have been very interesting to me are the impact on war-torn countries such as Iran and Iraq. We often think of these countries as being extremely conservative, and certainly they are, and that they should not, because of their bans on use of alcohol and other substances, have a problem with drug abuse or drug addiction. But we are sadly mistaken if we believe that, because both Iran and Iraq are having significant problems now with drug and alcohol use. In fact, in Iraq, we're seeing many people now using and abusing drugs. The United Nations is taking a very special look at what is happening in Iraq. After years of difficulty, they're finding more and more people here using a variety of drugs, and in fact, corruption and drug use have escalated significantly over the last 15 years. Drug smugglers have taken advantage of what they call the porous borders of Iraq, with the difficulty with stability in their government. There's less protection at the borders to keep drugs out and to keep drugs from crossing the borders from Turkey and Iran. And Iraq is struggling mightily with that. One of the things that has been very interesting is the increased use of Valium, not only among soldiers, but also among citizens of Iraq, particularly women. This has become a substance that is being used more and more, and pharmacists are now having to really be much more cautious about protecting the medications and the pharmaceutical substances that they have, because these pharmacies are being raided. Tramadol, which is a pain reliever, has been of particular value to the drug trade, and more individuals are also using methamphetamine and are using crystal meth, also known as ice. So the women of this country in particular are suffering with their disease, and many of the women are having to move towards prostitution in order to be able to afford or to have access to the substances that they're using. It's really been expressed in terms of increased violence, robberies, threats, and deaths that have happened as the drug trade increases. There are increased requests for drug treatment, but in Baghdad there is one hospital that has room for only 10 inpatients to treat for addiction, which is, sadly very underserved, and the rate of folks needing this treatment is escalating greatly. When we come back, we'll talk about the role of drugs in other countries, including Iran and China. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Please join us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and we're talking about addiction around the world. We've looked at several countries and note that substances used may depend on availability, certainly, cultural and religious pressures and history, that countries will have different attitudes towards how they are going to handle the problems of addiction and drug trafficking. Some countries choose to ignore it by, we don't have people who have addiction, so therefore we don't need to deal with it. Other countries trying to minimize using a harm reduction model, saying we can't stop it, we can't control it, but we are going to minimize the impact of drug use and abuse on not only the individual and their physical health, but we're also going to try and provide support and treatment, including giving heroin to heroin addicts in an attempt to decrease crime and to provide the person with a safe, clean place to use their drugs, all the way to prohibition, which we experienced here in the United States. Unfortunately, people's drive to have mood and mind-altering experiences seems to greatly outweigh any kind of legal, religious, or political attempts to contain it. And as we saw here in the United States with prohibition, one of the difficulties that happened was that there was an increased black market trade in alcohol. Now, we did see a significant decrease in, during the years of prohibition, in the amount of liver disease that was experienced by the population. But we did not see a decrease in alcoholism or the use of alcohol by folks who have the disease of addiction. And that's an important distinction to make. The disease of addiction is a genetically inherited brain disease, and the control mechanism to help a person understand when they have used too much, when they're becoming cognitively impaired or physically impaired, does not work properly in folks who have the disease of addiction. And with exposure to substances, they lose their ability to stop when they need to stop. This is pretty consistent. This disease is pretty consistent throughout most cultures, and it has been pretty consistent throughout time. I give a lecture to families and patients about the evolutionary advantages of the disease of addiction, which is another story for another day. But inherent in this disease is also some very good qualities that help people who have this disease be successful, and certainly if we can contain the lethality of the disease, then we're able to see a much more successful person than we would have ever before they even started using drugs and alcohol. So when we talk about the disease of addiction, it's pretty consistent throughout most cultures and most countries. And the drugs that people use and the way in which they use them is the most striking difference. When we look at Iran, for example, there are significantly increases in the use of methamphetamine. Methamphetamine is a substance that is certainly used here in the United States, but Asia and the Middle East are much higher consumers, if you will, of methamphetamine and amphetamine-like substances. In fact, seizures of methamphetamine increased 128% between 2008 and 2012 in Iran alone. And last year, the government of Iran confiscated 3.6 tons of methamphetamine. While we think that most addicts in a country like Iran or like Iraq would be men, we're seeing many more women becoming involved with this. And in fact, interestingly, university students are finding that this is a way to enhance their studies and to improve their grades. Women have been sold drugs in beauty salons with the promise that it will help them lose weight. So just like we see here in the United States, in Iran, the motivation to begin trying these substances are pretty consistent. The students wanting to improve performance, the women and the young women wanting to lose weight. So these are the hooks that get people going. Unfortunately, psychiatrists in Tehran are having a hard time convincing people that methamphetamine is an addictive substance. They're quite used to the idea that opium is addictive, and this is certainly within their culture to have try to deal with opium addiction. And while opium is still the most abused drug in Iran, methamphetamine is certainly gaining on it, and unfortunately part of the problem is that people don't believe that it is an addictive substance. The drug has been imported, but more recently they're seeing that methamphetamine is now being produced locally, and unfortunately this greatly impacts not only the availability of methamphetamine, but the increased dependency that poor families, more rural families, and individuals become dependent not just on the substance itself, but dependent on the revenue that can be generated from this particular substance. Methamphetamine, unlike cocaine, unlike marijuana, unlike opium, is not dependent on a crop production. You don't have to worry about having enough rain or enough land. You don't have to worry about hiding the crops themselves. You don't have to worry about the harvest and the steps that have to be taken to manufacture the substance. They can find many of the items needed to manufacture methamphetamine very easily, particularly in an agricultural setting. And this changes the face of not only the distribution, but the use of these substances. Methamphetamine, unlike alcohol or tobacco or marijuana, is much more potentially addictive and much more likely to cause a rapid downward trajectory in terms of the person's ability to sustain their usual lifestyle and to become involved in their day-to-day activities. there are many folks around the world, not just in the United States, that are what we would call functional alcoholics, that go to work every day, take care of their families, pay their taxes, and so forth. When people become addicted to methamphetamine, this is an incredibly destructive substance that quickly reduces the person, not only physically, but emotionally and cognitively, in ways that make it very difficult for them to sustain a living in any other way other than drug dealing and drug producing. So, thank you. The effect of methamphetamine on a community, on a culture, it can be quite devastating. And when we look here in the United States at cities and towns in the Midwest, for example, that have been completely decimated by the influx of methamphetamine dealers and productions, we see this is a very different drug. It is not necessarily, although it has become more so, but it is in the United States primarily a Caucasian, rural or suburban substance that is locally locally produced and distributed, as opposed to an inner-city drug that eventually will move out to the suburbs. It's a very, very different substance delivery system, and it certainly is a devastating problem to begin to have in any neighborhood, and the folks in Iran are suffering with that. Many years ago, we recognized Japan as being a major source of amphetamines, and certainly in the in Southeast Asia, in Japan, in China, we see amphetamines and methamphetamine being a continual problem. I have done some work in Malaysia on the in Kota Kinabalu, and working with a treatment center that is starting there. When talking with their treatment providers and with local potential referral sources, the primary drug of concern for that country was going to be methamphetamine, and dealing with folks who are addicted to stimulants creates a complicated treatment program. If you look at the amount of the pleasure chemical dopamine that is released when someone uses methamphetamine, it's 1,100 units of dopamine compared with 200 units of dopamine released when someone uses morphine. So 1,100, the scale, the amount of pleasure chemical released is astronomically more potent, creating in this person a tremendous craving and a tremendous drive to continue using the drug. Unfortunately, this makes it very difficult to help the patient stay away from the substance long enough for their brain to reboot and their body to heal. This compulsion and the high that they get from this drug is better than anything they can get in real life. And trying to get them to a place of sobriety is difficult indeed. So countries who are facing methamphetamine as one of their major drug problems have a significant difficulty in trying to get people to a place of sobriety and treatment. And unfortunately, countries like Malaysia are going to be faced with a lot of difficulty, and lengthy periods of time are going to be needed to help people get to a place of recovery. When we talk about other countries, in our next segment, we're going to talk about China, we're going to talk about Turkey, because these particular countries have some additional unique problems and challenges, and certainly have some of the largest populations in the world. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and we're talking about addiction and drug use around the world. Interestingly, and during the break, we were having a little bit of a conversation about countries that have banned alcohol seem to be of increased risk for people using stimulants. So we saw Iran, Iraq using methamphetamine. Again, opiates have been in that part of the world for a long time. But as we're seeing growing numbers of folks being able to produce, manufacture, and distribute methamphetamine, we're seeing some increased problems that I think are somewhat noteworthy, which is the substance that they're using causes increased aggression, decreased need for sleep, decreased need for food, increased paranoia, and a significant compelling desire to continue to use the substance. They are not using substances that calm them down, that make them sleepy, that make them relaxed, that make them chill and mellow. They're using substances that can actually increase some of the difficulties, at least from our point of view here in the U.S., some of the difficulties in terms of trying to find peace with those nations. And again, China is not that far behind. China has found itself to be experiencing exponentially increasing numbers of folks suffering from the disease of addiction, and in particularly gambling addiction. While India has been known as the mother of opiates, and China has definitely loved opiates, we're seeing many, many increased appetites for not just the opiates, but for other drugs of use and abuse. And the Chinese population has increased access to Western ideas and increased access to money. And as we see this happen, we're seeing increasing amounts of folks, particularly in China, using substances and gambling. China is the first country and the only one I know so far to designate internet addiction as a clinical disorder. And there was a recent film that was released back in August called Web Junkie that looks at the way in which particularly adolescents are becoming addicted to gaming and to the use of the internet. There are actually, and this film Web Junkie looks at some of the boys who are taken to a private American style rehab facility that these kids are taken there to treat their internet addiction by parents who have just been completely overwhelmed and have tried everything to try and get their kids to stop. An interesting idea, but this is becoming an increased problem. So we're seeing gambling among adults and internet addiction in youth of China. But probably one of the things that we might not be aware of is China, particularly in southern China, it has become the epicenter for the use of ketamine. Ketamine, as you may know, is a dissociative anesthetic that was actually first patented in Belgium in 1963. It was used to treat as an anesthetic for children and for animals. It was also used for women while they were giving birth. There were a number of very difficult problems that happen to people as they're coming out of a ketamine anesthesia, and so it was discontinued and is now used only for animals. But shortly after it was patented, it was used quite extensively in Vietnam, actually, as a way to treat injured soldiers. And from there, it was introduced into the Far East as a recreational drug. And China has developed a huge business in terms of the use of ketamine. In fact, it's known as K or K-Fen, which means king. It's the most abused drug in Hong Kong. And 99% of the world global seizures of illegal ketamine were made in Asia, most of them manufactured illicitly in China. Even in the United States, the ketamine that we see coming up through Mexico, its original source is probably in China. And there are increasing numbers of folks actually manufacturing ketamine in China. One of the authors of an article in about ketamine in China said that he had had questioned a local zookeeper in Thailand about how it was that all of these children were being photographed sitting on the backs of crocodiles and tigers. And the zookeeper's response was ketamine, that they were using the ketamine to sedate the animals so that parents could take pictures of their children sitting on top of a crocodile, a live crocodile or a live tiger. Ketamine has become that common. And it is really, unfortunately, thought to be not addictive in China. That they call it a drug that they can use on the lunch hour because they can take the drug, go into the, quote, K-hole, and come back relatively sober in an hour. There has actually been a number of reports of deaths of people using ketamine in clubs. And because of its effect, not only as a dissociative, making you have distortions of time, space, and observation, it also increases heart rate and blood pressure and can be potentially lethal, particularly if combined with other drugs. It is used not uncommonly in a number of karaoke bars, and there will be people singing, dancing, performing in the karaoke bars, and then long lines of ketamine being snorted off of trays that are provided for the folks who are attending the club. There is a WeChat message board that is in China, reported to have 300 million users, and it has become a popular tool for trafficking in ketamine. They offer delivery to your house in hours, and certainly many of the companies who advertise on this message board will promise you 24-hour delivery and delivery with just one phone call. Apparently, the lingo is on WeChat. Rice is the nickname for ketamine. If you want pork, or if you want methamphetamine, then that's pork. And many of the dealers will use avatars of pictures of pills as their avatars to help people find their way to get their delivery within an hour. Prices are relatively inexpensive, and it's a very high purity. So unfortunately, people are having increased access in China, because this is China was and continues to be a legitimate manufacturer of ketamine, but now there are a number of illegal factories that are producing ketamine. And again, like methamphetamine, this is something that is synthesized, so it depends on raw products and not necessarily crop production or water supply. There are there's a rehabilitation center for ketamine addicts that have been set up in Hong Kong. They report that their treatment for ketamine addiction lasts 6 months compared to just 2 months for their treatment of heroin addicts. Ketamine, very difficult to treat, ketamine addiction, and is something that is becoming, again, an increased problem in mainland China and particularly in South China. When I have worked in Turkey at a treatment center for adolescent boys, one of their main primary drug of choice is inhalants. Many of these young men, unfortunately, live on the street, are extremely poor, and all they can access in terms of substances are inhalants like gasoline, paint thinner, causing significant neurological damage that is often permanent. So the drugs are being used and abused around the world. What you have access to may determine you'll love the drug you're with. Certainly cultural, politics, logistics play a role in it, but people are looking for something to change their mood and change their mind. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. I'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.